Hello, everybody, and welcome to the official Quitproof podcast. My name is Tom Quitproof Jones, and I'm your host. Our goal with this podcast is to give you insights and inspiration on how you can have a happier, healthier, and more productive life. And most of all, not quit somewhere along the way. You can find us on YouTube at Quitproof, Instagram at Quitproof, the number one, Facebook, Tom Jones Quitproof, and our website, www.quitproof.com.
Hello, everybody, and welcome back to the official Quitproof podcast, where we have expanded our platform, and now we are including your Quitproof story. So this is not only a solo podcast anymore, we're expanding it to include people that are amazing, that have overcome things that would put most of us in the ditch and make us give up, give in, tap out, and quit. Today, we have a very, very special guest, someone very near and dear to my heart, a person that I've worked with in mental strength and resilience coaching, a person that I helped and watched climb an incredible mountain in Arizona, Saddleback Mountain. I watched her climb this mountain and display true grit, the likes of which would rival anyone or anyone that I've ever been with or I've ever seen. Lily, welcome to the podcast, and thanks so much for being with us.
Hi, thank you, Tom, very much. It's an honor to be here. I'm excited to share some of my story and be here with you, Tom. Tom has been an incredible coach for me, so this is a great new venture to take on together. Thanks, Tom.
You got it. So, Lily, let's just dive right into this. Can you give us some of your background? You were diagnosed with muscular dystrophy, is that right? And I think it was at a young age, but I'm going to let you go ahead and introduce yourself.
So my name's Lily Brash. I'm 22 years old, but at age 16, I was diagnosed with a rare condition called central nuclear myopathy. It's a rare form of muscular dystrophy. It affects every single one of my muscles, from my toes to my arms to my legs to even my voice. I've experienced extreme fatigue, weakness, and struggles from birth, but I was only diagnosed at age 16.
When you were diagnosed, were you kind of aware that something was off before you were diagnosed? And how did they get to that diagnosis? How did that come about? Tell us about that.
My parents noticed, and at age 1, 2, I had trouble holding my neck up on my own, as well as, so even at age 5, 6, 7, I wasn't walking normally. I wasn't able to run as well. So I knew something was off, but we didn't put much effort into getting a diagnosis until I was 16. But as a baby, I believe they weren't sure what it was. So did that I would just slowly wither away and die by age 2. And if I lived past age 2, I wouldn't be walking. So that was just the soft diagnosis at that age. And then when I had ended up living past that age, we decided to look further and get a diagnosis.
So let me just go ahead back and let me review what you just said. So at 2 years old, you were pretty much, or younger than 2, your parents were told that you wouldn't live past 2. And if you did live past 2, you wouldn't walk or function, you'd be pretty much bedridden, and that was pretty much that. Is that right? Is that the bombshell they got dropped on?
Yeah, so it was just basically, she won't live past 2, and if she does, she won't be walking. That was what they had told them. And it's been difficult because I don't fit into one category of muscular dystrophy, so many will argue I don't have exactly muscular dystrophy. That alone was enough to tell my parents, well, nothing's certain, especially if they can't give me a strong diagnosis.
Did they start doing like occupational therapy for you and things like that when you were younger to try to help you along? And then when you were 16, it was just officially diagnosed as they finally found out that it was just this rare form of muscular dystrophy, and so they could put a name on it?
Yeah. Yes, exactly. So when they told me I wouldn't be able to walk or I wouldn't live, my father, who's a doctor, refused to believe that based off of his knowledge. And he went in and he studied more about the condition, the soft diagnosis, like I say. And then he every day would do therapy with me. So he kind of, as much as you can do with a newborn baby, but as he would kind of help me to climb upstairs, and then at age 1, he'd force me to do it every day. And he remembers that I had a very soft voice, but I would cry through it, and I would scream, and I would, you know, fight with him because I didn't want to do it because it was painful, and people would tell him to not push me anymore, but he kept pushing.
Okay, so now I'm super curious. When were you aware personally that you had some real issues, and what did that do to you mentally? Were you despondent? Were you depressed? How did you feel when you became self-aware and you're like, oh my gosh, I have this condition? Can you kind of walk us through that?
Yeah, some of the things I've noticed at this age in my life, as I go through some of the mental challenges, they really only started later on. During my childhood, most of the time, until I became a teenager probably, but my parents, for better or for worse, kind of acted like nothing was different with me. Well, I would complain about something hurting and they'd act as if it was just any child being hurt. Because they wanted to give me that mental toughness, I believe, and I think it ended good in the end. But so I was aware as a young child, but I just didn't think anything of it. I just thought, that's just who I am.
So your parents didn't play into it, so therefore you didn't play into it. Is that what I hear you saying?
Right. I mean, I struggled with insecurities and knowing I was different, but I didn't think it was some terrible thing. Now when I tell people, you know, I have a rare form of muscular dystrophy, you can see the sadness come to their face. But to me, it's like everyone has a struggle. But I guess as a child, definitely, I went through mental battles for sure.
And what were those mental battles like? Were you just disappointed that you couldn't do certain things, and that really, you know, maybe lent into some depression and that type of stuff? Is that what happened?
Yeah, a little bit of, not much depression until later on, but a little bit of like noticing I was different, a lot of embarrassment, not wanting to do things because I looked so different than the other kids.
Were you ever in a position where you were like, why did this happen to me? Did you ever go through that phase? Why me? Why did this have to happen to me?
Yeah, so I know a lot of people, my siblings alone, would ask me that as a kid. They'd say, well, I'm sure you're upset you're the child that got it, because I have 5 siblings and one of the chances, you know. But to be honest, like, I don't remember ever thinking that until someone had implemented that thought into my mind. I didn't think that way. I kind of just thought, this is my struggle, you have yours. But in my early teens, I did start to think a little bit like that. What's my purpose? Why am I here? But I noticed, and a lot through my training with you, Tom, but it wasn't really my thoughts. It was other people's thoughts being put into my brain, how they would feel if they had it. But if I'm being very honest, before I grew up, I did struggle with that, you know, why me, so on.
At what point did you decide, you know what, I'm not going to let this hold me down. I'm not going to let this kick me butt, my butt. I'm going to use this as a vehicle to overcome it and empower other people that are going through similar struggles to overcome it. What was that epiphany like, and when did that happen?
That happened when I was around 2021. I started to challenge my anger in a different way. People would notice I was angry, and then I started to think that I was angry myself, and I realized I wasn't angry. I was just craving and desiring change in this world, and I knew I had so much in me that I could give that many people didn't believe. So I was 20, 21, and I went to my father. I said, you know, I'm sick of people pitting me. I'm sick of people feeling bad for me and using my story as a reason to feel grateful for their life. I don't understand that concept, because everyone has a struggle.
What did you decide to do to prove to yourself and prove to others that this really wasn't a disability? This was just a challenge to overcome and a hurdle to jump over. And what did you decide to do to prove that?
Well, a lot of several different things, but it started with just accepting the fact that you can't. Society is always going to be changing, and people are going to have collective thoughts and perceptions and beliefs and stigmas that come with having a disability. But you have to knock those thoughts out of your own brain, because As much as you think they're yours, they might not be. They might just be what everyone else is saying. So I decided to do what many people told me I couldn't, kind of as a sign that.
Because they were telling you, like, sit down, don't do anything. You've got this condition. Yeah. They were basically telling you the way that you should live your life because this condition existed in your life. Yeah. And they're hammering that into your head. Yeah. And it's amazing that you dug deep and you're like, no, stop. That's not me. Yeah. I'm not going to accept that as my circumstance. I'm going to go the other way.
I get backlash for saying this, but it's not just me. It's every single person with a disability or a challenge. It's everyone on the outside. They just want to pity and push them down and down and down without knowing. I'm not saying they're intentionally trying to do it, but if someone is born into less opportunity, they say, well, you have less opportunity. Your chance of succeeding is not high. You have a disability. You can't do this. This is how your life should be. This is how it always has been in the past. This is how it is for everyone else. So you just have to challenge that. And
do you think that people do that because it makes them feel like they're in control of whatever, mm-hmm. and that they can kind of put that to rest and go, okay, you're in this little compartment. This is your spot. Mm-hmm. Okay, I can move on with my life now, and you're mm-hmm. compartmentalized and have a nice day. Do you feel like that's true?
Yeah, I think for sure that's true. I think people can't understand it. Kind of like death or any unfortunate event, people can't understand it. So they want to put it, like you said, in a group and define it and set expectations for it, when in reality, they don't really know. They want to limit people without knowing that that's what they're doing. Mm-hmm. I think it makes other people feel better about their own lives to put down others. And I used to be timid to say this, but it is what many people do.
As you know, when I do motivational speaking, I say we have two choices. We can either assume the role of the victim or the victor. And it seems like so many people that have issues, no matter what those issues are, and so many people that don't even have issues decide that they want to play the role of the victim. And you took the other road. You took the role of the victor. And so you did a bodybuilding contest. Is that the first thing that you did to come out and basically prove? And also, Born to Prove, as I understand it, you told your father at the very beginning, I'd rather live strong than die weak. Is that right?
Mm-hmm.
That is such a powerful statement, Lily. I am just so touched by just even hearing that, you know, I'd rather live strong than die weak. I mean, that is so powerful.
Yeah.
So you actually said that to him.
Yeah. And you know, it scares people if they're not like you, Tom, which is why I respect you so much. You know how much I love you and everything you stand for. It's just so many people that scares them. They look at me, they want me to be a fragile girl with a disability, and they say, basically, they say, be the victim. But yeah, I'd rather essentially, in a way, die for what I believe in and live a strong life here on this earth. I'm not going to live weak despite what anyone says. And that's why I chose to.
That's such a powerful thing, Lily. And I want to stop for a second and I want to make a big deal about that, because most people aren't being told constantly, you can't do this, you can't do that, you can't do this, you can't do that, you need to stop, no, mm-hmm. don't try that, blah, 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 mm-hmm. you know, and just being hammered with that constantly. And the fact that you had the mental strength and the resilience to not accept that as your reality and go into a different place. Do you feel that you were born with that? Or do you feel like you just developed that along the way and you were able to transmute anger into determination and dig your heels in and go, you know what, that might be your reality, but it's not my reality?
Yeah, for sure. I think I was raised with it because my father's very determined, but I think I took it to a point where even they couldn't handle it because they had raised this person that just won't take no for an answer. And even, you remember, Tom, we'll get to the mountain, but they wanted me to stop because of danger, and myself, I'm like, let's keep going. Mm-hmm. So I think a lot of it was being raised with it and just.
Let's go to the, so you decide that you're going to do a bodybuilding contest. So were you already working out with a personal trainer at that time, or did you go hire a personal trainer and kind of develop this plan?
Yeah. So I was 16 when the training began, but little backstory, many doctors told me not to. They still tell me not to, but then this will lead into the training and the competition. So, but
let's stop for a second. Why do they tell you not to do weight training? Is that bad for your bones, maybe your bones might break, or what's their reasoning to tell you not to do weight training?
Yeah, so as a 16-year-old, I didn't get much of a reason, but recently I got the reasoning. But it's apparently, according to what they know, without the right supervision, it can be damaging, but that's just for anyone. So you just have to take it light and slowly and be cautious.
Did you like interview a bunch of personal trainers and then finally find one that you liked and you clicked with and started working with them? Is that how that process went? Or is this a real specialized type of deal?
So for my first trainer, I went with a trainer who I knew, but he was just a family friend who had been training my family for years. He did end up working with my physical therapist at the time to ensure that it was safe and that we were being cautious.
And then did you work with a different trainer to do the bodybuilding contest?
And then for the bodybuilding competition, we had another trainer, a female trainer, come in to help with posing and help with diet, nutrition. And I think it was about a year of training specifically for the contest.
So you trained for a year specifically for this contest. Tell us about the contest. So you show up for this thing. Were you like overwhelmed? Were you anxious? Were you like roaring to go? What was your mindset when you went into this thing? Did you have doubts? Obviously, this wasn't a special needs bodybuilding contest that you mm-hmm. went to. This was like a full-on Ron bodybuilding contest, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, for sure. Yeah, I was feeling... I went through a lot of feelings getting up to that point, but when I was there, I was kind of feeling anxious at first, nervous, but more so this like drive that's in me. It's kind of, people call it anger, I call it determination, but just to kind of do it, and despite everyone telling me not to, and it's not one of those cliche stories like they told me I couldn't, so I did. It's just the concept of limiting people is so dangerous, and if other people my age are not going to stand up to it with me, people with disabilities specifically, but then I must, because it's just dangerous to keep the world going like this with the ideas that people are limited.
So I'm interested, how were you received at the bodybuilding contest by like the crowd, the other competitors? How did that go?
Yeah, so they were very welcoming, shocked. Some people shared their stories with me about their siblings or friends or cousins with certain neuromuscular conditions. A lot of people tend to not believe the condition that I have until they see me walk or fall, but very welcoming, very inspirational environment. It was a very inspirational environment. Yeah.
You find the courage, you take action, you go do this contest, you're well received. It's very, I'm making an assumption now, was it very empowering for you to do that? What was the end result when the bodybuilding contest was done? How did Lily feel?
Yeah, I felt great, because while it was a physical competition, it really was my mental battle I had to get over.
It takes a lot of courage for anybody to get up there on stage and start hitting poses and so on and so forth, much less somebody, you know, that has gone through the challenges that you've gone through. So I was really curious to know, and for our listeners to know, that at the end of that, did it deliver everything that you had hoped that it would deliver before you went up there, after, or did it deliver more? What was that?
I think it delivered a lot for myself, a lot. I mean, I know there was messages to other people, I hope so, but it was the first challenge I had to get over my own mental battles, and I did. Because living a life of embarrassment from the way you were created is no life to live. You feel trapped, you feel scared. So to get up there, climb the stairs, walk across the stage and pose when my body clearly looks much different than the huge bodybuilders was a big mental challenge that I had to overcome. So now I can continue to fulfill my purpose and help others.
Pin a medal on you. So I'm also interested to know, were your parents really supportive in this? Did they have anxiety? Did they have apprehension? Were they going back and forth like, oh my gosh, don't do this? Or were they like, go tackle it, Lily, you got this? What was their role in all this?
They were, ended up being very supportive, but it was a little back and forth, because I oftentimes I'm teaching them lessons that they're not even aware of because they haven't had the specific kind of challenges that I have. So when I went to them and said, this is what I want to do, they initially were like, well, that's strange. You can't build muscle the way others can. I explained to them it was about the message, the mental barriers, and then they were truly on board and they helped me get there.
Bodybuilding's contest is over. You know, it delivered. You gained a lot of mental momentum and it was all good. So what in God's name made you want, how did the mountain come about? I mean, how the heck did that, where did that come from? Explain that to us.
So like I said, the bodybuilding competition was more of a mental barrier to overcome. And then I felt that the mountain climb would be my physical barrier to overcome.
Okay.
It took a lot of mental prep as well, as you know, but also physical prep. And I felt
that this was no little hill that you're climbing either. Let's just be very clear about this. This is an advanced climb for any climber that goes out to do a climb. You didn't start at the bunny hill here. You took on the advanced black diamond run. Was that daunting for you? Or, you know, how did that come about? You're like, no, I want to do this mountain. Were people looking at you going, that mountain? Are you sure, little girl? I mean.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, it was, like I said, I'm driven to do whatever. I'm motivated. Anytime I feel like something's stopping me, it's always an outside voice. It's never mine. So once you can just conquer that and stop caring what people think, it becomes fun. You just want to keep challenging yourself, keep pushing yourself. And that's the message. The message is push yourself every day. And
what I want to qualify and clarify is you're basically saying that you believe that the only limitations that a person has is the limitations that they set on themselves.
Truly believe that. Yes.
Well, you put your money 100. Where your mouth is, I'll tell you for sure. So if anybody has, you have. Because I, you know, want the listeners to know, well, Lily hired me to do mental strength and resilience coaching for her in preparation for this mountain. And I'll come straight out and say it. When I went and did research on this mountain, I was like, oh my gosh, this lady is amazing, because she's not, like I said, she's not taking on the bunny hill here. She's taking on an advanced climb for anybody. And so we decided that we were going to do it. We went through several months of mental preparation to do this. At the same time, you were going through the physical preparation to do this. Was there a point before you went out and you made the climb where you just went, oh my gosh, I want to hide underneath the covers and I don't want to come out? Like,
was yeah.
there a time where you were just like, oh my gosh, what the hell have I got myself into?
For sure. There's always that fear of not making it, that fear of it's always what will people think. It's always what will they say? Will they feel bad for me? All that stuff. Because pity, I hate pity. I think everyone hates pity. But definitely the night before, the week before, again, these voices getting in your head, they're not. These voices that you don't have to listen to, but people are conditioned to believe they have to, that they have to believe these voices.
So you didn't believe it. So let me ask you this question, because I went with you on this climb. Mm-hmm. When we went up and we actually saw that first flipping uphill, all those big boulders stacked on each other going straight uphill, what did you think? What went through your mind? Because I'll tell you what, when we pulled around that corner and I saw that, I was like, well, we're definitely in the deep end of the pool here. So what went through your mind for good? Because this is the first time that you attempted any type of climb at all. I mean, we did a little practice climb that was nothing, absolutely nothing compared to what we went. And when we went around that first corner together, we both, I mean, I stood right next to you and we looked at that thing and I was just thinking to myself, boy, oh boy, okay, here we go.
Yeah.
What were you thinking?
Definitely, yeah, the same things. Those boulders, they were huge. It was scary. It was in the back of my head. I knew I had the right team in place, the right precautions and safety. So all I had to think about was mentally getting myself up there while everyone else, you know, helped me. And it's a challenge because it's like, well, I'd like to push myself so much where I can do it alone, where I can just get up there and keep going to the top. But I'm not saying that people with physical challenges won't need a little extra support, a little extra help to get up those huge boulders because it is challenging. I'm just saying you can't use that as an excuse.
No way. Your mental drive is what brought you up there. The fact that, and I'll just be a testimony to this, the fact that you needed help sometimes getting your leg up, but you pushed yourself up, you pushed yourself mentally. You had an opportunity to quit 10,000 times over. And frankly, a lot of people would have that have no physical challenges whatsoever. What I saw from you was the heart of a lion. And I was beyond impressed. Those boulders that you climbed up were big. They were huge. They were vertical. One of the things that really I remember from the climb is that people were just completely enamored with you along the way that just happened to be out there climbing. I remember this one lady that stopped and she just started sobbing and started saying, "I don't even know you, but I know what you're doing is amazing." Do you remember that?
Yes, I will forever remember that. That's exactly why I did it, to get those, like, it's like a wake-up call. You know what I mean, Tom? Like, wake up and see what people are capable of. Enough putting limits on people. Like, obviously I had to get the help. I had to get the training, but we did it.
Yeah. And you touched so many people that were there that day on that mountain, not to mention a bunch of people that now have heard about it. But I can tell you that from personal experience, you touched so many people's hearts that were coming up and down that mountain. It was amazing. In fact, if you remember on the way down, like the rescue team, you know, the people that are on the fire department that come and rescue people, they were cheering you on. I mean, they were on the rocks mm-hmm. up above and cheering you on, and they were impressed with the whole thing. So it was amazing. Yeah. Now, let's talk about, so we get 2/3 of the way up there. Most of the day is gone. We're looking at not being able to summit, but being well over 2/3 mm-hmm. of the way up. What made you go ahead and decide that you were going to go ahead and call it a day, and we would come back at some point and summit that based on what we had already learned? To walk us through that. So we've climbed for what, 5 or 6 hours by that time. Mm-hmm. We were getting ready to do the final assault. People were like, no, we're going to run into dark on the way down. People are going to get hurt. I know that you pushed on for probably an hour past that. And what went through your mind when you finally said, okay?
I had to understand that a lot of people's safety and lives were at stake besides mine. It was getting dark. And I looked, after I'd pushed for an hour further, I looked at the next set of rocks, and they were very narrow and steep. And I had to worry about other people's lives, considering that they were helping me get up this mountain and I wasn't going to push further to put them in danger.
Well, I'll tell you what, as far as I'm concerned, you made it to the top, because what I saw was amazing. And I saw, like I said, I saw you touch so many people's lives along the way, on the way up and on the way down. And then we had to turn around and we had to take several hours to get down that thing. What was your feeling when you got down to the bottom? How did you feel?
All I can really remember is the excitement, the determination. I felt safe. I felt strong, stronger than ever, and grateful. And
I can tell you personally, hopeful. I've never seen such determination. I mean, outside of myself, I've never seen such determination in a human being ever. You took a tiger by the tail, and your mental state, your drive, your determination, your dedication was just unbelievable. So that's done. You go home. What was your parents' state of mind like? I know that they went up the climb with you, and I was frankly absolutely impressed that they made it, you know, based on the fact that they obviously didn't have any climbing experience, and theirs was true grit as well. What were their feelings like? What was the family meeting like afterwards when all of us were gone away and the family was together? What was that like?
I think people were just kind of a little shocked, being told that I wouldn't walk. So they're like, wow, my siblings shocked, my parents shocked, and on a high for sure. And I hadn't ever in my life pushed my body that much past its so-called limits.
And let's just, okay, so let's put this into perspective for people that are just listening to this podcast and aren't like watching it on video. Lily, how tall are you?
5'5".
Okay, you're 5'5". Lily, how much do you weigh? I could take a stab at it, but I don't want to do that. I want you to tell me, how much do you weigh?
About 110.
Exactly. Here's a lady that is about 5'5" tall, that weighs all of 110 pounds, that took on this mountain that I'm telling you would challenge me. Unbelievable. So you get down, we're all done with it. Your family meets together. Everybody's happy with the result. You go home, and then all of a sudden you decide you want to strike out on your own. You want to go live on your own. And your parents must be just going, oh my gosh, this girl is a hard charger. So you decide that you want to go live on your own and go to college, and you want to strike out on your own. Take us through that.
Yeah. So after the mountain climb, came home, and yeah, like I said, just feeling fulfilled, determined. Again, just this concept over and over again that I try to say. It's, you have, like you say too, Tom, no limits. It's only what others either put on yourself or you allow it to be put on you, but they're not real. So
had you always wanted to strike out on your own, or was this something that just like you woke up one morning and you're like, I want to live on my own? Or is this something you've always wanted to do and you just executed it at that time? Or how did that play
out? I never thought about it as a want so much, because I don't know, I enjoy living at home. I knew I eventually had to move out, and I thought about it many times because I oftentimes need extra help. But when I got into my dream university, I kind of had to make that switch. So it's been a challenge. It's been difficult. And I'll tell you again, most people suggest that I don't do it. And thank God for my parents, because so many people, and I'm not even hesitant to say this anymore because I'm so fed up with this concept of pitting your kids, pushing them to be less than they can be.
So you're basically enabling them to be disabled. Yeah. Is that a fair statement?
Exactly. Yep. And that's where the word disabled, it's like, what does that even mean?
Oh, if anybody takes the diss out of disabled, it's you. I mean,
yeah.
So let me ask you this, and I don't want to butt in, but I'm really interested. So I'm sure that people contact you all the time that are going through challenges because they're physically or mentally challenged, whatever they're classified as, and I hate to say it, but they're in this compartment called disabled that people label them. What type of advice do you give them as far as their situations go? And like, if I was to call you up and I'm like, yeah, hi, I'm Tom Jones. I've got X, Y, and Z, and they tell me that I'll never this, or I'll never that, or I'll never the other thing. What do you have to say to those type of people? What type of advice do you give them?
Yeah.
I'm sure there's going to be a
and
lot.
And I do. I get a lot of messages like that, more than I've ever gotten in my life. Since I started being more open about this online, I get a lot of messages. They vary from angry messages, but most of them kind of like, well, how can I do it too? And it's difficult for me. It puts me in an interesting position because I have this extreme mindset that many people can't understand. Well, they can understand it. They choose not to. So when they tell me like, well, doctors tell me I shouldn't work out. Doctors tell me I shouldn't walk. Doctors tell me basically just live your life in a wheelchair and give up, basically. I have to be careful. I want to share my extreme beliefs on that, and I want to tell them, hey, so, I was put in a wheelchair too, but...
Let me ask you this question, because you said that sometimes you get mean, or people that are mean or angry or obviously frustrated because they've got these conditions. What does that look like? You'll get a message like, I hate life, I don't want to live. is that what you're saying?
Yeah, I get those. I get messages many times. Real people will... One question, what I'm doing, they'll say, you're going to be putting other people in harm by encouraging this. You don't actually have muscular dystrophy. But then I'll also get messages of people in wheelchairs or who were just diagnosed with conditions, who seem to be getting weaker, who are trying to still fight. And they'll tell me, hey, Lily, I just came across your page. And I, without naming names, of course, what they'll share with me, this was going to be my last day. I was done. and I saw your page, and now I want to continue on. And that's what it's about, because what doctors and scientists don't realize is when you're telling a patient, hey, you may never walk again, you just tell them that, and then they go home and they have to live with that.
So they basically, they plant that seed in a person's mind, and then the person goes home and basically nurtures that seed and waters that seed, and that seed grows. And you're kind of the antithesis of that, is where you tell them, like, hey, don't let those people tell you, you tell you, you know, that type of deal. And it's amazing to me that people, and I know they're out there because they're just out there, they're part of the human element, is these haters that would actually tell you, oh, you're putting people in harm's way and blah, 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 blah. It's like, if you don't have enough to deal with already, they come at you like that. I think we should all pray for them.
Yeah.
And we should feel sorry for them.
And the funny part is the interesting thing even more so is that the other perspective of not encouraging people to pursue their dreams, to push harder, is harmful as well, because it can lead to spiraling depression. It can lead to this idea that they can't achieve. It can lead, which is better.
I'd rather aim high and hit than aim low and miss.
That's what I'm saying, Tom. I'd rather spend every day, even if a doctor told me you can't walk, I'm still going to try every day to walk.
Yeah. Or is that I'd rather aim high and miss than aim low and hit, right? So that's amazing. So now you've made a doc, you've actually are working on a documentary movie. What's the name of that movie? And when should we be looking out for that to come out, Lily?
Die Strong is the name, and you should look for it to come out early 2023.
That's amazing. We'll definitely be looking out for that. If people listening to this want to get a hold of you, how do they do that? Do you have some websites, or do you have Instagram, or can you tell us how people can get a hold of you? Because you're a great resource. I mean, you know, there's people that talk a good game and people that can play a good game. And I'll tell you one thing, Lily Brash, you can do both. So how do people find you?
You can go to my website, which is just lilybrash.com, or my Instagram. I check messages. I respond. I love to hear people's stories and offer some encouragement.
And how do they find you on Instagram? Is it just Lily Brash, B-R-A-S-C-H?
Yes.
Okay. So that on Instagram, you're Lily Brash, B-R-A-S-C-H. Website is lilybrash, B-R-A-S-C-H.com.
Yep.
Or borntoprove.com as well. Is that right? Okay.
Yep.
So there's several ways to get a hold of you. You can always just Google Lily's name, Lily Brash. And Lily, at 22 years old, I mean, it's just so inspiring to know somebody like, first of all, to have met someone like you, to know someone like you, and to have the honor of working with someone like you. You're just the quintessential meaning of quit proof. And that's why we wanted to have you on, is because you, Lily Brash, are indeed quit proof, and you inspire other people to be quit proof and to not accept labels that other people put on them. And we are just so grateful, and we're so blessed to have you on with us. We want to thank you so much for your time, your patience, your positive energy, and sharing your story with us. Is there anything else that you'd like to include before we close it out?
Yeah, Tom, I think that was beautifully said. Again, I'm very honored to be here, very honored to meet you and work with you. You're incredible. And to everyone listening, stay quit-proof. I think that's incredible. And thank you guys again.
Yeah, because at the end of the day, we all have to hang tough, stay strong, and remain quit-proof, because pain is only temporary, my friends, but quitting lasts a lifetime.
Lifetime.
And we're hoping that this insight, this inspiration, and this information that's come from Lily Brash today helps everybody have a happier, healthier, more productive life, and most of all, inspires you not to give up, give in, tap out, and quit. Lily Brash, thank you so much. I look forward to working with you going forward and seeing what's next in your journey. You're an amazing, amazing human being. I'm so proud and honored to know you. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Tom.
Again, you can find us on YouTube at QuitProof, Instagram, QuitProof, the number one, Facebook, Tom Jones QuitProof, and our website, www.quitproof.com. If you like what you're hearing, then hit that subscribe button and recommend this to your friends.